104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with a big story of the day.
Oh, Tiger just dropped one from about 15 feet. Yeah, Tiger. Come on, baby. Tip your cat, homeboy. Look at everybody going nuts for Tiger. Nobody cares what he was doing to Perkins. Yeah. My man is, he bogeyed 8. He bogeyed a par 5. You can't do that, Tiger.
Nope.
So he's 1-under for the day. He's 4 strokes back of Brooks Koepka and a couple of other dudes. Phil's at 4-under for the day. So he had a bad day. Phil shot one over. And Tiger's right in the mix. I love it, Chad. Love it. Nobody cares. Nobody cares what kind of cad Tiger Woods was.
Is he banned from Perkins for the rest of his life? Like a lifetime
ban? Banned? I would promote that. What do you mean banned? Why would he be banned?
I don't think the old folks, the demographics of Perkins are...
But Perkins, like a lot of these 24-hour waffle places and pancake places, they have... Well, there is racist grandma time. That's usually like 4:30 to 6:30 at night. You know, that sort of thing.
Trying to get the early bird special
for
dinner.
But it's also the after bar crowd that these guys try to satisfy. It's a whole different audience at these places. You know, from about, you know, midnight till about 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh.
Yeah.
So I've never been to a Perkins at that hour.
You're kidding me.
I'm completely serious.
Oh. Really? You've never stumbled into a Perkins-like place at the end of a night?
In college, we went to Taco Bell, and I bought a six-pack of tacos.
Oh,
I ate those.
No. The great thing is to have all those eggs and coffee and sausage just sop up all your misdoings from the from the previous evening. Really? You've never had a moment like that? Like, you've never been at the Denver Diner at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning?
No.
Really?
I am completely serious.
Oh, my God.
In Boulder, we went to Taco Bell.
Oh, okay. I don't know what to tell you. It's one of the most fun parts of a successful night out on the town.
Okay, well, that's where...
I mean, there's a lot of things that can go wrong after midnight. So at the end of the day, if it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're at the Perkins or the IHOP, things are probably all right for you.
Yeah, there's only a couple things open after midnight.
You've probably avoided most of the bad decisions and you just need like an omelet or some scrambled eggs or an unlimited amount of waffles. Who knows?
Or the phone number of Becky, the waitress.
Maybe, but usually the pursuit has ended by that point. You know, whatever was going on
that
night.
The pursuit doesn't end until you get home, man. You're still out on the prowl, aren't you?
You know, when you're at the Perkins, except for Tiger.
Right.
But usually when you're at that Perkins at that time, it's the dream is over. But not Tiger. Not my man Tiger Woods.
No, we kept the party going.
Oh, my God. I cannot quit Tiger Woods.
The mock turtleneck is back.
Yeah, he's at Amen Corner, the classic par 3. He'll soon cross over the Palmer Bridge.
How about the skip shot across the water?
I saw that. That was in the par 3 contest. Yeah, that's you can do that. You know, that was done by... who did that? I saw it, though. It was awesome.
Now, I saw a video clip of Arnold Palmer trying to teach that shot. It took him about 4 takes to make it across.
Jordan Spieth nailed that one. Yeah, he just got hit with a lot of topspin. It's like skipping a stone. Tiger buries it! Oh, man, 5 feet! Oh!
That was a nice shot.
That was a nice awesome shot.
And it just stuck.
Dang! Why do I like Tiger Woods so much?
It's a compelling story.
Because he's not really the greatest person in the world, you know.
And at this point, he's not the greatest golfer.
No.
But he still drives
Why
attention.
Why is he so freaking interesting to everybody?
Because we love a redemption story. We still root for him to win.
Why do we do it? Why is he, by far, still, to this day, the most interesting part of golf? Isn't that amazing? After all this time, he is still the most interesting part of golf.
The name Tiger itself just makes it memorable to everyone. Jordan Spieth doesn't just roll off the tongue. It's not burned in your brain.
Nah, Jordan Spieth is just boring, too. He's a great golfer and all. He's just boring. Tiger's like, shut up, everybody. We got other people have to play here. Uh-oh. Are they getting, like, lightning warning or something? Uh-oh. This might be bad. We may be getting some lightning warning at the Masters. Can you look that up, Richie?
Is that the start of a little gut for Tiger?
Oh, man, who am I to criticize the physical well-being of anybody? So I'll just stay away from it. Tiger looks in pretty great shape. I think we're seeing kind of a weird, iconic moment right now, because on this par 3, the classic par 3 at, what is it? I think it's 14, 15. I believe there is now a lightning delay. And so the other two golfers with Tiger haven't shot yet, but Tiger's ball is 5 feet from the cup. So what you're seeing right now is a really very, very quirky thing. Tiger, by himself, is walking to the hole to mark his ball to get it off the course while they have this lightning delay. This is insane. So Tiger's the only person walking up to the green on this incredibly iconic hole.
Yeah, you saw the caddies doing the, you know, cut the throat kind of motion, like, hey, it's a rain delay. So
right, so I would suspect a player has to mark his ball. He can't have a caddy mark his ball for him.
You gotta do it yourself.
And he's just all by himself walking up to the hole to mark his ball because everybody else is getting off the course. That's kind of a weird, kind of cool moment right there at the Masters.
First time ever seeing that, yeah.
Like, he'll have to walk by him. There's only one way on and off that hole. You have to come across the Azalea Bridge.
It seems pretty crazy to be that close to the pin.
Dude, he's got like 5 feet slightly uphill. He is going to drain that sucker.
And not be able, because you had to walk over there. Just walk over there with your putter and just put that bad boy in and be done.
Jeez, you know what? I wonder if he'll... No, because he didn't take his caddy with them.
No, he didn't take. He left his putter with his caddy. He had it in his hand and gave it back to his caddy.
So I guess he's just, because it looks like they're letting other guys finish their holes that they're on the green. Yeah, that's kind of quirky. Like, why wouldn't would they let him just finish? Nah, you can't finish the hole before the other guys hit onto the green.
It would be so great if we could turn the volume up on the broadcast and actually know what's going on.
Well, there's clearly a lightning delay. I mean, that's definitely what's going on.
Right, but what are these other players doing, all that?
Or they're getting the hell off there.
How come they didn't mark their ball?
Because they didn't hit yet. Tiger hit.
No, these other guys who are on the greens.
They're on different holes. They were already on the greens. They're just letting them play it out.
Okay.
But they can't let Tiger play it out.
Because no one else has hit it.
Nobody else has hit the ball.
Right.
It's a very odd, quirky moment. Anyways, Masters coverage. Hello, friends. Right here on The Fan.
What's your golf game, D-Mac?
It used to be all right. It used to be about maybe a 12 or 13. But I played a lot of golf before I had kids and long time ago. Loved it. Love golf. But to keep it up, to really be good, you got to put some serious time and energy into it. And, you know, when I had the time and energy, it was awesome. Loved it. And I've played so many incredibly memorable rounds with my dad specifically. My mom, too. She plays golf. But my dad... me and dad playing golf. I mean, and all sorts of great places. Now, in all honesty, I love like just going to Topgolf and just go to Topgolf. It's like an hour and a half or something. You know, it's just fun. You know, my kids kind of suck at golf. So like to take my kids like onto a real golf course would be more painful than enjoyable. So you just take the kids to Topgolf. You pay way less money for the most part and just have some fun.
We should go. I've got a couple of, you know, as a former player, you get an invitation to all these golf tournaments. I got a couple of golf tournaments coming up this summer.
Yeah.
I got to improve my game.
Do you like it?
I don't love golf, no.
Well, then you're screwed, so don't worry about it.
But I love going to these tournaments. It's great.
Best ball?
They're all best ball, of course.
Oh, okay. Well, if you're playing best ball, you don't need to practice. Just have fun. You're an athlete. You probably hit one out of every seven shots pretty good.
I would say of the best balls, my ball is probably best 4 to 5 holes.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah.
I have high expectations and standards.
Yeah, I mean, out of like 70 shots or in a best ball tournament, you're probably shooting in the mid-60s. So out of 65 shots, they're using maybe like 5 of yours.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of sucks.
No, it does.
take away 18 putts, because putts are just fluky.
Right.
Like, who knows who's going to hit a putt, really? And your chance of hitting a putt is just as good as Joey Golf, you know, store, who does nothing but putt.
Joey
so
Golf
let's take away 18 putts and 65 shots. So we're talking 47 shots. So out of 47 shots, they use five of yours.
That's
yeah,
all right.
Yeah, you kind of suck. But but whatever.
Hey.
I'm happy to hang out with you and hit some golf balls.
Every once in a while, I hit a ball and I'm just like, that was beautiful. It sounded right.
Yeah, well, you're like 6'3" and in ridiculously good shape, and you're a pro athlete. So, yeah, you should be able to do that. But, you know, don't play with your boy Charles Johnson. CJ will embarrass you.
I believe it.
Yeah, because he's a real golfer. Well, the only thing I take away from CJ is he's had some time on his hands.
Right, which I'd prefer not to do.
Yeah. Because you can't really be a great golfer
without practicing.
Yeah.
It's not a natural skill set.
Yeah. You don't want, like, your surgeon to be a great golfer. You don't want somebody who has a really important job to be a great golfer.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't, because it just shows that they're probably not focused on, I mean, we're talking important jobs, like life-saving type of jobs or, you know, important decisions.
Air traffic controller?
Yeah.
Heart surgeon?
Sure, heart surgeon, right. You don't want to find out, you're like, your heart surgeon's like a qualifying for the U.S. Senior Open.
It's a scratch golfer.
Yeah. Did you watch any of the abs last night?
Disappointed, of course.
I mean, it was ridiculous.
That's your party, the back end! Shot, deflected, and scores! Backlund shoots, scores! And now Grubauer's gone to the bench with an extra attacker. Empty net for Kachuk,
and
scores!
Then DU loses. I'd say we
lost. DU lost first. I was watching everything at the same time. I can tell you the chronological order of all the disappointment.
We laid out that schedule yesterday, and I was like, man, this could be a great
weekend for sports. DU's getting smoked,
yep.
And it's looking bad, and they make an awesome comeback, and they take it to overtime. By the way, I understand people realize that I was born in, except for 1 year in third grade in Steamboat Springs with Mrs. Stanko's class.
Stanko?
Mrs. Stanko, third grade, Steamboat Springs. Look it up. I promise you. Aside from that year, I was in Massachusetts growing up. UMass is in the town of Amherst, which is like way to the west of Boston. If you were more than 20 minutes off the water, in my world, you didn't even live in Massachusetts. I mean, seriously, you just lived in the woods or you lived in Connecticut. And UMass was out in the middle of nowhere. I've never been to UMass. I never rooted for anybody from UMass, including Marcus Camby, who was part of that huge John Calipari cheater squad. I mean, how do you think John Calipari got guys to go to UMass? They cheated. I mean, definitely. Did you see the 30 for 30 about John Calipari?
Yes, I know.
Did you see Marcus Camby just flat out admit that they cheated?
Yes, I know.
Not probably. They played at the Centrum in Worcester. Yeah, I don't know anything about UMass. My father, played for Northeastern, which is in the city of Boston. So we had no connection to UMass. People were like throwing out remarks to me on social media last night about like how I would be rooting for UMass, which is like preposterous. I mean, there's people in Western Massachusetts that rooted for the Yankees. Stupid. You get that far west. Massachusetts is a dumb-looking state. You realize that, right?
I live there. I know this.
Yeah, it's a stupid geographical state.
The whole New England states, just make it one state. They're all small.
Make it one state.
They're all small. It makes no sense. Because, I was a Patriot, so I worked.
Make it one state.
I lived in Massachusetts.
Dude, do you realize how many more millions of people live in Massachusetts than Colorado? I
come from California, a very large state with a huge population.
How many states should California be? Maybe four states?
It could be.
Yeah.
If it was on the East Coast, it would be.
One state.
As a West Coast, it's a giant state. My whole point is, I lived in Massachusetts. I worked in Massachusetts, but I wanted to go out to dinner. I went to Providence, Rhode Island.
Yeah, because you guys were down in Ding Dong, Foxborough, like one of the worst holes ever.
Well, that's where the stadium was.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's where work was.
Yeah, they and because they were going to build a Patriots stadium in South Boston, and all the depotted gangsters make sure that didn't happen, but it was supposed to.
Right.
It was supposed to be in Southie.
Now it's in Foxborough. Everyone lives in North Attleboro. That's the place where all the Patriot
players
live.
Yeah, it's a horrible place. It's nothingness.
There's
just
nothing there.
Zero. It's not interesting at all.
So Providence, Rhode Island is a 15-minute drive. Boston is like an hour and 15-minute drive.
Right,
so I very rarely went to Boston. I always went to Providence, Rhode Island.
So you know what I'm talking about in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Foxborough's barely in Massachusetts. Amherst? Why, what the hell?
No. I had to go see a therapist in Amherst.
Sorry.
It was a long drive.
Did he help you straighten out the things going on in your brain? And
it was a foot therapist.
Oh, foot therapist. Oh.
Football.
Oh.
Foot therapist.
Sure it was.
Yes.
What about the flame? Oh, my gosh. I saw Mark Schlereth's little video with Mike Evans where he was so snarky. Richie, can you find that maybe on the Schlereth and Evans Twitter thing? And you got to hear the snarkiness with Mark Schlereth. Holy cow.
I listened to the drive today just so I could have some context to you at in your Mike Evans digs.
Oh, I didn't. Was he talking about me again today?
Well, just listening to the show overall, just so I could be prepared to have the context to understand what it is you're talking about. I was driving up to Boulder. I watched the Buffs practice this morning.
I saw that. I saw you. By the way, I actually haven't been inside their new facility, but I saw your picture. That place looks unbelievable.
Oh, it's awesome. It is a top 10 college football facility, without a doubt.
I want to ask you about what you're doing up there. Here's Mark. I guess Mark hates hockey. Is that it? Is that the whole? He hates Game of Thrones and hockey.
Yes.
Okay.
Game of Thrones first, though.
All right, so here's Mark being snarky with Mike Evans.
Hey, pretty special moment here on Schlereth and Evans, because, Mike, I have an award for you. I'm so excited to present this. Now, this is a very special certificate of participation to you and the Colorado Avalanche and the Avalanche fans.
Wow.
For showing up and skating against the Calgary Flames last night. I mean, I get it. 4-0, but boy, oh boy, they controlled the ice for the first period. There's no question about that. This is a moral victory certificate. So, Mike, congratulations, buddy, on your moral victory. You're such a jerk.
Patrick Holly, the backhand, scores! Back to the captain. Rashad, the fuck of the score! Backlund shoots, scores! And now Grubauer's gone to the bench with an extra attack. Ramsey, net for a good shot.
Great first period, and the rest was a disaster. I mean, they were out everything. Name a category, and the Flames did it better than the Avs. Anything. Everything.
Fighting?
Yeah. Yeah, because they got some licks in that we didn't really retaliate with the right way.
Shots on goal?
Oh, statistically, I don't know. I'd have to look up the box score, but I think so.
Checks into the glass? I'm just going to name random hockey things.
It is funny because we were talking about just like big goaltenders. So when you see Smith from the Flames, who's like 6'5", 220 or something like that. I mean, it does look kind of stupid. I mean, you really do think to yourself, well, why not find somebody who weighs 500 pounds and teach them how to, you know, slide back and forth? I mean, it looks preposterous.
It's coming.
Like, he's maybe a little too like tall, I guess. But I don't know if you can be too like too fat. I mean, he's so big. It's goofy looking. So I think analytically, that's the direction of hockey, by the way. They'll just find bigger goals. Well, just makes logical sense, right?
I didn't believe you until I pulled up, you know, the tallest goalies in hockey, and they're all 6'6", 6'5". They're giant men trying to block the pipes with their body.
But theoretically, he was like their weak link. Like, he was going back and forth with this other dude late in the last month of the season. He's... You know, his goals against average is, save percentage, sorry, is like in the 800s, which is really low for goalies. Usually you're, you know, 930 or something higher. And, he was great. He was all over. There wasn't a room to breathe. There wasn't a shot that, well, they hit the pipe. They did hit the pipe late in the game, and that was about it.
They hit the pipe?
Easy. I tweeted that too, and everybody's like, "Oh,
hit the
420." Oh, yeah. I'm like, I don't know how else to put it. How else should I put it when they shoot the puck and it bangs off the pipe?
They hit the pipe.
Yeah, they hit the pipe.
Did you have any more grandma thoughts before the night was over?
Well, every grandma born from 1900 to 1915 is the most racist person in the world.
I got home, I told my wife, she's like, that is too funny. My grandma was such a racist.
Yeah. Yeah, and my wife threw in, yeah, how do they feel about Jewish people, too? And I'm like, you know, that's a good point, too. And then we realized that this was not the golden era of of understanding and sympathy.
No, by no means.
It's funny because I brought our conversation up. I talked to my mom today,
uh-huh.
And sure enough, she goes, yep, Nana, she would drop the N-word all the time. I was like, really? She goes, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Then she goes, my parents were fine because her parents were born and raised in the city of Boston itself around all sorts of different people. I've got a gay uncle, so they have a gay son. So they're just a little bit more understanding just in general. But my other grandmother was born in, you know, the suburbs and yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Nana was a racist.
Nana was a racist, yeah. Yeah, my Nana was a racist. And I don't know how she felt about gay people. And, you know, and we were, you know, Irish Catholic. So, you know, if you weren't that, I mean, you probably, there was probably something wrong with you.
Right.
She always treated me nice. She always had like, you know, there's always like little candies and ginger ale. So, you know, never.
Kisses on the cheek?
Seemed to be an endless supply of candy and ginger ale every time I went over to her house. She seemed to like me.
My grandmother's thing was butterscotch, giving me butterscotch candies. But I always wonder how she felt about my dad.
All right, well, let's So when you put something out on Twitter, again, but then I talk more about it. It's like, it's really just our grandmothers, though. Like, because we're in our 40s, late 40s. It's our grandmothers.
The younger generation's grandmothers.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Like, my kids' grandparents are fine.
Yes, my kids' grandmother, my mother.
My parents are fine.
Are fine.
So maybe it's just like, if before you send something out on Twitter, get a hold of Eileen and Peter McKee. I'll make it much more fun. What would Eileen and Peter McKee think? Specifically, those two. All right, the Avs, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. Game one, I know they threw out a stat yesterday. Remember when I said, hey, if you're going to lose game one, and then on TV last night, well, 68% of teams that win game one win the series.
I heard you say that, and I didn't have any stats to back it up, but I thought, it works the same in every sport. You win game one of a series, that gives you a much greater chance to win the entire series.
But I guarantee you, for example, if you win the first two games, your percentage goes way up. If you win the first three games, I think it's astronomical.
Right.
So I would bet, and I wouldn't know, Rich, you would have to do some research, of all the leads in hockey, my guess is the best chance to come back still is game one, down 1-0.
Oh, without a doubt. Rich, you don't need to do any study at all. There's no question that that's the easiest deficit to come back from.
Right, and then tied is a greater percentage to come back from.
Right.
And then you just go like that, and the further you're down, the less of a chance you have. So I think my theory still holds up, that if you're going to lose a game, game one isn't the worst one in the world to lose. Of course you're at a deficit, and you'd rather not be at a deficit, but still, it's kind of okay, depending. I don't know. The Flames just look so much better than the Avs. It was hard to watch. It was hard to watch. And you just, when's that moment? When are they going to get that goal? When are they going to break through? And it just never happened.
No.
And what was crazy is DU loses in overtime, and then you turn on the Rockies and the Avs. None of our teams are scoring.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, well, who's going to score first here tonight? And then John Gray gives up like one home run, like one bad pitch. Other than that, he actually pitched great. And people are bombing all over John Gray. It's not your fault if you lose a baseball game. You can't blame a pitcher if he gives up one freaking run. Give me a break. So tough night for the local teams. But hopefully we lick our wounds and we come back and we're awesome.
I hope. Yeah, we got to take a break. I understand. We'll go into more grandma talk. And in terms of Pro Football Focus, they are breaking down the Broncos in kind of an interesting way. We have details for you of that next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Welcome to Bronco Land. Welcome to Bronco Land. Welcome to Bronco Land.
You know what the NFL stands for? What have you done for me lately, Lee?
I think they're getting going at the Masters again, by the way. I had a little bit of a lightning delay down there in Augusta. And I tell you what.
Tell me.
Because my kid didn't have any games canceled because of it, just because they had a little hole in their schedule or they didn't have any high school baseball games, I love the snow that we just got. My lawn is looking freaking unbelievable. I swear, man, it is. It is pretty sweet.
I called my sprinkler guy. He's like, oh, you got a couple of weeks, man. We're going to get some snow. You got plenty of groundwater.
He's fibbing. I already got my sprinklers going and turn. I mean, I had to turn them off and cover the hose and all that the past couple days.
So you're bragging about the extra work you've done?
I haven't done anything.
You said you turned them off and covered the hose and did all this other stuff.
You walk out the garage, you hit on to off, and then you, the hose thing, I just have a little cover thing, throw it on, takes 3 seconds.
All right, well, I didn't do any of that.
Okay.
Right, I'm cooler than you. How about that?
I don't know. You're going to have a hard time beating my lawn. I'm just telling you, three-prong approach. I don't touch a thing.
What's your prongs? Give me your prongs.
I got an unbelievable group of guys that cut my lawn, edge it, have all the machinery once a week, had them for the past 5 years. One.
Okay.
Two. I got a company, so I shouldn't do a commercial here, but I got a company that we don't advertise with that just does all the, like, you know, the grassy sort of stuff, the take care of the weeds, and they, you know, do the right fertilization, and they just, they
do the aeration,
they
and all
do
that all,
they do that stuff too.
Uh-huh.
And they come once a month and they crush it. And three, I got my sprinkler people.
Nice. This is my first year where I am not doing all those things myself.
Yeah. Why have you been doing them all yourself, period?
Because I take pride in my lawn and I want to look fantastic.
I'm going to tell you something. I guarantee you, you suck at that stuff a lot more than all those three people I just mentioned. No matter how hard you try.
Respectfully disagree. I slay my lawn.
I doubt it.
I slay my entire yard, my pond, my lawn, my shrubbery.
Right, I'm not here to talk about shrubbery and ponds. If you want to talk shrubbery and ponds, it's a whole other conversation.
That's a garden show. But this show is a sports show. We only talk lawns on this show.
Right.
Okay.
I did all that crap too, Chad, okay? Uh-huh. Don't be looking at me with some sort of weird guilt trip, all right? I've been freaking mowing lawns since I was 12 years old.
Okay, good.
With the freaking push mower in Ipswich,
yeah.
Where I lived on a marsh, you had to cut the lawn every 3 days. It was ridiculous. Okay?
I grew up in California.
You understand?
Well, there is no weeks off. You mow 52 weeks out of the year. There's no winter off in California lawn mowing.
I don't even... Boo-hoo!
I'm a man.
Thank you. We're just yelling at each other now.
In like 3 years of mowing in California, I beat all your time in Ipswich because you got the whole winter off.
So full of crap. I'm talking about a push mower where the wheel would constantly fall off. And we're talking blades, no gas motors. We're talking push mower.
I cannot be responsible for Peter McKee's cheapness.
It was unbelievable. It was staggering how cheap he was.
Forcing you to use a mower with a wheel fell off.
It was ridiculous. And we had to sharpen the blades every now and then. It'll be fine. Tell me when you're done.
My dad was a mechanic. The lawn equipment worked flawlessly.
Okay, no lawn equipment here. And we basically lived in the marsh. Like, the marsh was always coming into the lawn. Dude, I gotta show you a picture sometime. I mean, it is a nightmare of, like, it was a small area, but it was preposterous.
Okay.
So there was that. Then I thank God lived in college and in a city for the next basically 15 years of my life. And then we had kids and we had to move to the suburbs because that's what you do when you get scared of living downtown when you have a kid. Oh my God, I can't live downtown because I got a kid. I got to move to the suburbs. And that's when the real horror show starts. You know, all the city folk that live downtown, you know, all these people in Wash Park. Have you ever seen their lawns? Like 3 feet long. Yeah, there's nothing.
It's 3 feet by 3 feet.
Who couldn't take care of that?
One pass and you mowed it.
That's
right.
Why they drink so many Coronas out on their porches all day.
All that time?
Yeah, because they'd like to think they do outdoor work, but they don't. They just have excuses to drink Coronas in the neighborhood.
I will join them this year because I am farming out my yard work to other people for the first time.
Yeah, we started this about like 4 years ago, and it's like the greatest thing of my life.
I'm looking forward to it.
Because I did all this stuff terribly, by the way.
I slayed it, yeah. So I'll have high expectations.
You're a much better man than I am. You and Stink and all you lawn people with all your lawn stuff.
My mulch and my garden. My rocks look great.
Why don't you take another lap around Home Depot and just think about the weekends? I know. Smell that cut wood.
Look at that pond.
Oh, my God. Look at that pond.
Oh, the koi look happy. Man.
Oh, yeah.
My water lilies. Ooh, they're blooming.
Can't wait to live in an apartment. Oh, didn't you show your kids? I showed my kids. I didn't care. You want to see somebody who did a really terrible job? Talk about my two teenagers for the past 10 years. Oh, my God. I was like, forget it. Three-prong approach kills it. So it looks awesome. I love the snow, rain. Everything looks great. You guys are awesome. Thank you, nature. I've seen who these Broncos are bringing in. It's kind of interesting. They are bringing in like an interesting tight end. His name is Josh Oliver.
Play action, rolling right. Carrillo to the end zone. Touchdown, Oliver. And the Spartans strike first.
Carrillo taking another deep shot. It's caught. The tight end, Josh Oliver, somehow comes down with it.
Wilderson's in the backfield. It's a reverse. And none will toss inside the 10. He's got Oliver.
6'3", 250. San Diego State, or San Jose State, I believe.
It says SD.
I know. I think that's wrong. I think it's San Jose State. We could double check that, Richie, but I think it's San Jose.
It is San Jose State.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was my guy, Trey Bender from ESPN, on the call there. I worked with Trey Bender in the past.
They've brought in Noah Fant. They've talked to this guy, Josh Oliver. They're going with the tight end.
That's it? It's done?
Yeah. There's enough, need there. There's the injuries to Jake Butt, which are, concerning. I hope Jake becomes that man. I really do. I'm a big fan of his, but it's pretty clear at some point in the draft the Broncos are going to take a tight end. So, as we go through things, let's keep an eye on who they're kind of interested in. And Josh Oliver. Interesting size, 6'3", 249.
Roughly my size as a player when I played.
Boy, that does not...
Doesn't float your boat?
It's got some red flags to me.
Based on?
Size.
He's not tall enough? He's not long enough for you?
Yeah. Seems like an issue. So I have to think to myself, well, why are they interested? We have some other guys, too. We should go through the list of all the guys they're going through. And we'll do that with football at 4. But we have some incredible concerns about the Rockies. And Pedro Gomez will talk us off the ledge, or maybe he'll push us off. That happens next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio.
Talking to Pedro Gomez of ESPN. He joins us now. Hi, Pedro. How are you?
I am doing much better than the local 9.
Yeah, that's for sure. Presented by Blake Street Tavern. Yeah, last night was...
Kevin Pillar for the Giants. Swings at the first pitch. Drives one deep left center field. Desmond going back. It is gone! And this game is scoreless no more. Kevin Pillar.
I mean, they're 3-10, and you can't, win it in April, but you can lose it. And Pedro, I'm telling you, if they are 10 games under 500, starting in May, I don't know. I think it's done. I think it's a wrap. Or help me out. Give me other teams who have been 10 games or worse under 500 in April that have made the playoffs.
It has happened. Look, the 2012 or 2013 Oakland A's, they had a horrible first 2 months. And all of a sudden they switched managers, and I'm not saying that needs to be done in Denver because it does not, but they did. Oh, that Oakland club switched managers, and Bob Melvin came in, and they went on a tear, and they ended up, I want to say, winning 95 to 100 games. It was some ridiculous number. That's how much of a tear they went on. So it can happen, but the fact that it's less than a handful probably that have done it lets you know how next to impossible it is. And look, a game like last night, that's where the offense really should be burying their heads out of embarrassment.
Yeah.
Mostly because John Gray pitched one of the best games he has ever pitched in his life.
I know.
And nothing to show for it other than a loss. And, you know, this is an offensive lineup that should be scoring some runs, and they're just not. They're not doing it right now.
I don't know how I would even. I don't think Bud Black's doing anything different. And
no,
and I'm watching the games. I'm like, I don't know what else he could do. Like, what else is there?
Well, I mean, that is the beauty of 162. At some point, things will turn. They will. I guarantee. At some point, we're going to be talking about how well the Rockies are playing. It's just, you know, it happens at the beginning of the season, and everything is magnified, especially when you are supposed to be one of the better clubs in the entire league. And instead, you right now might be the worst club in the National League. You know, it's just the results are not there for the club. And like I said, a game like last night, that – there should be utter embarrassment on so many levels. And maybe that's the kind of thing that will put a spark under them and say, we can't do this ever again. So, who knows? It's the most bizarre game in the world because it's all predicated on failure. And right now the Rockies are experiencing a lot of failure.
All right, to pile on to the, failure part of the storyline here, Nolan Arenado, no home runs. Charlie Blackmon, no home runs. Obviously, the offense has been an issue ongoing. Is that a result of just them facing good pitching, or is something wrong with both those guys' swings right now?
Well, no. I mean, there is something going on because you can point to that series in Tampa and say, they were facing outstanding pitching because Tampa is an excellent pitching staff. And, you know, but these guys are too good to be putting up the kind of numbers that they have been putting up, especially the power numbers that are not there at all. You know, you go by track records in baseball, and I'll take the over if the over is 10 on each of those guys hitting home runs. 20, 30, even 35, I would still take the over, especially with Arenado. But you know, it's just not happening right now. And when it doesn't happen collectively, it just shines such an ugly spotlight on everyone in that lineup. And that's kind of what's going on right now.
Why is San Francisco specifically that ballpark so hard to score runs in?
Well, it is a big ballpark, believe it or not. The alleys are enormous, which is why there are so many triples hit at that ballpark. Mm-hmm. You know, the marine layer comes in at night. It deadens the ball. That's why what Bonds was doing, you know, for all those years, people were in amazement. Of course, as we subsequently learned, there may have been more going on, or there was more going on than just him hitting home runs, as the Balco trial proved. But, you know, it's a large ballpark. And California ballparks at night, the ball just dies. Mm. It just dies. So, you know, it's a combination of things. But it is a larger ballpark, which is why the pitching has always been so important to the San Francisco Giants during their great years earlier in this decade.
Yeah, okay. But, I mean, you know, I know it's tough to score in, but, I mean, you got to do better than
you
zero.
You got to score more than one. Right. Yeah, you got to score more than zero. Yeah.
That's really not asking too much. Yeah, all right. Exactly. You know, it almost makes me wonder if you got to just take a completely different approach in San Francisco, period. And, like, for the Rockies, for example, what about taking Charlie and moving him down the lineup in San Francisco and maybe move a fast guy like Hampson up or even move Trevor Story up in the lineup, who's fast as well, and play a different type of baseball? And
yeah, this is where the front office and Buddy Black have to come up with some answers, at least to try things.
Right.
And that's, you're right. You're right. It's time to not just say, okay, we're going to be okay. Because you are getting to a point where psychologically this could really have a longer effect on the guys than just the first 2 weeks of the season. So, yeah, there's definitely a time when you need to shake things up, even if it's just to show the guys in the clubhouse the status quo is not good.
All right, Pedro, we appreciate it. We still love talking to you no matter what. So it's definitely not your fault. And hopefully we shake it loose a little bit. So.
Here's what I guarantee. It will get better. It cannot get worse.
All right. Okay. You realize, like, the Avs and the Rockies both didn't score last night. I mean, both local teams. And we had DU Hockey losing overtime to UMass. Who even knew UMass had a hockey team? And so it was rough around here. Rough, Pedro, I'm telling you.
Hey, the Broncos didn't lose.
Thanks, Pedro. All right, we'll talk to you later. Pedro Gomez.
How long before a guy like John Gray gets frustrated? Pitching a great game, getting the offensive production.
You know, Jason DeGrom won the Cy Young last year and had a losing record. The win-loss thing in baseball isn't what it used to be. It's not as big of a deal. So I think John Gray actually would probably be okay with last night. I'm sure you'd prefer to win, obviously. But again, I'm telling you, wins and losses, like, you don't get paid in baseball anymore just on wins and losses. It's all, you know, the other baseball-y stuff.
Okay.
Because they figure if you pitch a certain way, you know, the offense is going to do something, and if you keep pitching that way, we'll eventually win. So, like, you don't say, oh, John Gray's upset, and then if a pitcher comes out and gives up 7 runs but his team scores 10, you know, that guy had a worse day even if he gets the W.
Right, I understand the difference of it, but at some point, you're just an athlete trying to win a ball game.
You're an athlete trying to pitch well.
You're not trying to win a game?
You hope to win the game because it's always better to win, but you want to pitch well first.
Okay.
It's like, as a hitter, you talked about the home runs, for example.
Right.
And yeah, it's nice hitting home runs for sure. Are you hitting the ball hard? Are you seeing the ball and hitting the ball hard? That's kind of the bigger thing. The home runs will just kind of happen if you're doing that other thing well. So with Nolan, I don't even care about the home runs. I would say, well, okay, what's his, you know, his contact percentage? Like, his percentage of balls that he hits, how hard is he hitting them? That sort of thing. And where is he hitting him in the count? And what are his strikeouts? And blah, 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 blah. All that sort of stuff. What are you doing with men in scoring position if you're hitting third, fourth, fifth in the lineup? Stuff like that. The home runs are, you know, whatever. Awesome. You know, who doesn't love them? But it doesn't define whether or not you're hitting well.
Chicks love a dinger.
I've heard that before. All right, the Broncos with football at 4. There's a wide parade of characters they've been talking to, and we got to bring you who these guys are. And if it's not this guy, the positions that they play, because it's where the Broncos are probably going in the draft. That's next.